Stillman and Company, 1025-1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It is 5 o'clock, which means Chad Withrow joins us from Outkick, as he always does. Chad, we are reacting to the Jared Stillman mock draft. And again, this is just my mock draft. It is what it is. I have decided that it makes too much sense for the Titans to be able to take Joe Alt, and I think it makes too much sense for Chicago to need to get Joe Alt at left tackle to protect Caleb Williams. And so I think there's going to be this can't be that easy, Chad, that the Titans are going to be able to just sit there at 7 and draft a guy who might end up being a perennial all-pro at left tackle with no red flags. So I throw the curveball in there of Chicago trading up to 5 to get Joe Alt. What do you make of the Titans and Joe Alt and how simple this fit seems and how easy yet complicated the draft might be?
It does feel a little bit too simple for the Titans just to take the no-brainer top offensive tackle and for that tackle to be there for the Titans. So, yeah, I saw your mock draft, and I kind of like where your mind's at in terms of where the Titans need to go positionally. I also don't think that Joe Alt is going to be there when the Titans draft, whenever that's going to be. But, you know, with the Titans, you never know. But maybe the top guard is there. I know how much, you know, you and I love drafting guards.
Top kicker might be there, too.
So, yeah, you know, kicker, guard, you never know, right? Center, you know, what position could be there for the Titans to take? No, I think, it needs to be an offensive tackle, left or right, preferably left to start. But I really think that Joe Alt's going to be gone. The biggest intrigue right now to me, and I'm kind of just now starting my deep dive into the draft and getting ready for it about 3 weeks from now, is J.J. McCarthy and all the buzz about him being a top five pick true?
Yeah.
And I'm starting to buy into more and more that it is, and someone's going to trade up. I know you don't have him in the top five, but I think you've got someone trading up to 7, I believe, in your mock draft to get him or somewhere around there. So how does that shift the draft, right? Who's going to trade out of that? Is someone actually going to not take Marvin Harrison Jr., let's say, and trade out because someone is so desperate to get J.J. McCarthy? That's going to be the first sort of inflection point of the draft. And then, yeah, I think Joe Alt, it seems too good to be true for the Titans that he's actually going to be there when they draft. But we'll see. We got plenty of time to break it down. But, yeah, I mean, look, they need tackles. They need offensive linemen. That to me is the key with their first pick in the draft.
So I was, you know, kind of looking at the little draft, the Jimmy Johnson trade chart, when I was making a lot of these trades in the mock draft. And going back to the J.J. McCarthy one, for some reason, I just can't get fully on board that Minnesota is going to trade 3 first-round picks to move up to 4 to get J.J. McCarthy, which is probably what Arizona is initially going to ask for. But in order to get to 4 or 5 to satisfy the chart, Minnesota would have to trade both first-round picks. I just don't think J.J. McCarthy is worth one of those picks, and I don't think that Minnesota has to be worried about, say, Denver, who doesn't have the draft capital, being able to pop up there and steal him, which is why I look at 7 as the target for Minnesota, because in the proposed trade that I have, they get 38 back. You know, I mean, like, that's a player that they get back at 38, but the Titans get back into the 20s, and thus they can draft a left tackle and a right tackle with that pick. I'm with you. I think Minnesota acquired the second first-round pick because they decided they were going to take McCarthy. They just didn't know where they had to go up to get McCarthy. I just don't think that it's worth the 2 first-round picks, period, to move up to 4 or 5 and take McCarthy. And when I hear Mel Kiper Jr. say, I'll put him at 14 on my big board just because I think he's going to go in the top 6, but I will not put him a smidge higher than that, it's like, maybe this is just all smoke, Chad.
Yeah, and look, desperate times force desperate moves. And if you're a team that's in need of a quarterback and you don't have one, you're desperate. So I understand desperation in the draft and wanting to get that quarterback. Here's what I don't get, and maybe I'm crazy because everyone else seems to love J.J. McCarthy, or at least that's the reports we're getting or the sense we're getting from teams in the draft. Why would you trade that much draft capital to trade up and get J.J. McCarthy when you could get Michael Penix Jr. later in the draft?
Mm-hmm.
And I ask that question for Denver or Minnesota or, you know, any of those teams that are in need of a quarterback. as to why you would do that. I look at those two guys, and I'd prefer Penix over J.J. McCarthy. So if you could sit there, let's say if you're Denver, and draft Michael Penix Jr., I think that's a far better move than giving up what you're going to need to move up and possibly draft J.J. McCarthy. I like J.J. McCarthy. I think he's a fine quarterback, but I haven't seen enough with him to think that, oh, that's a guy that you're going to give up a lot of draft capital to move up and draft early in this first round. So I don't get that. I understand the desperate part of it, and I think Minnesota and Denver are both desperate to draft their quarterback that they want. And if they love J.J. McCarthy, then it's understandable why they would trade up and do that. But I don't get it with him when you could have Michael Penix Jr. later in the draft.
Well, and is Minnesota really that desperate after having signed Sam Darnold to that 1 year, $10 million contract? Because
yeah, they're desperate. I mean, Sam Darnold is not the guy.
So I actually
he's a guy. He's not the guy. And here's why they're desperate. Justin Jefferson is on their roster, right? Like you have a transformational talent at wide receiver. Maybe the best in the game right now. You have to go get a quarterback to pair with him. This is the new window. The Buffalo Bills need to start a new window with a new core around Josh Allen because their core has been blown up around him. This now starts the window with Justin Jefferson with whoever is going to be his next quarterback.
So my thing on Darnold is I watched, for some reason, a lot of the Carolina Panthers 2 years ago. And once they made the switch and they, you know, once Tepper got out of it because he gave up on the season and fired Matt Rhule and they got rid of Baker Mayfield, they put Darnold in there and Darnold and DJ Moore won a lot of games at the end of that season. I think he was 4-2 as a starter and he played well. And last year he didn't play because he was sitting behind Brock Purdy in San Francisco. I'm just saying if I've got the option of Darnold and I can use my two first round picks with Justin Jefferson or use the first round pick on a good player like Brian Thomas Jr. or one of these defensive players that are going to be there, then I can use the second pick on Michael Penix and sit him behind Darnold. I'd rather do that than trade the entire world for J.J. McCarthy.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here. I would rather do that if I'm Denver or Minnesota. I'm not trading up to draft J.J. McCarthy if I can draft Michael Penix Jr. later in the first round. So that to me, that's the best option for either one of those. I know I've read a lot of reports that you need to watch out for the Rams with Penix Jr., that he is a Sean McVay type guy, and they really covet him as the successor to Matthew Stafford at some point. I would understand that too, but they don't need a quarterback right now. Teams that need a quarterback right now, I love that option for Minnesota. Draft Michael Penix Jr. and then let him compete with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold's, you're right, likely to win the job to start the season. So he can sit and learn from him and not be thrust into action right away. And that's a good option. But it's a good option for Denver, too. I don't understand the love for J.J. McCarthy to where he would warrant trading up and getting rid of that draft capital to go up and get him.
Chad Withrow is with us from Outkick. What do you think about, again, the proposed trade? Minnesota moves up to 7 with the Titans. The Titans take Olu Fashanu with their first pick because if you're not going to get Joe Alt, you got to take the other left tackle. But then also using the second first rounder at 23 from Minnesota in order to draft another tackle so that the Titans just in one draft go tackle and give the two young guys to Bill Callahan.
I love it. It's weird. I looked at your mock draft and I never even thought about the possibility. But when I saw it, I'm going to be honest, I loved it. Like you've given the bookends to your team. Right? I mean, that's the thought. Like, okay, we're set. We're set at tackle. Now, we got two guys who are going to grow up together that are tremendous talents that are going to be the tackles for this organization for years to come. I would love that move for the Titans if they decided to do that. I remember we had a caller on our old radio show who said, I laugh about this to this day, he said, you know, quarterback is so important, you should spend every draft pick on a quarterback just to try to get it right. That, you know, first round quarterback, second round quarterback, third round quarterback. And you try all of them out in hopes that one of them works out. And I laughed at that possibility. But this is kind of that, but it's two spots the Titans need a guy in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Offensive line is super important. We all know that. But going with two tackles with your in this case, two first round picks, I think it's brilliant because it's what Will Levis needs in order to develop. It's what this Titans offense needs more than anything right now. It sounds crazy, but I love this idea.
Now, that being said, if the Titans do go tackle-tackle, they no longer, in my mock draft, they no longer have a second-round pick because that's involved in the trade with Minnesota. And thus, they wouldn't be picking again until the fourth round where they'd have two choices. Do they need, you know, how do they figure out defensive end to replace Autry, wide receiver to go with Ridley and Hopkins? You know, how worried are you about the other holes if they do go tackle-tackle with either their two first-round picks in this mock draft or if they go tackle at seven with Alt and Kingsley Suamataya in the second round out of BYU or Patrick Paul out of Houston? If they go tackle-tackle, which I think Rand Carthon hinted at this week, then what do they do about wide receiver and then defensive line and inside linebacker?
I think in order it is in order of need. It's wide receiver, defensive line, inside linebacker. Right? If I'm going the progression of who they need to draft and when, this is all basing it off of your mock where they're eliminating some picks to move up. If they did that, but Jared, this is a draft where the Titans cannot afford to go best available player. This has to be specific. This has to be position specific. This is not a, hey, we got to this spot and this guy was available and we couldn't believe it, so we we drafted this guy because he's just such a good player and he's undeniable, right? We drafted this running back.
Right. I was gonna say you can't take Tajay Spears again.
Exactly. Right. And that's the light bulb that goes off in my head that I see that position. Boy, this running back, he's just too good to pass up, so we had to take him. That cannot be the mindset of the Titans in this draft. It has to be, we need a tackle, we need a tackle, we need an inside linebacker, we need an offensive lineman, we need a receiver. You got to go, however they prioritize it, you got to go in a certain order of, we are taking the best available X for this spot, whatever that position is that you need in that spot. This is not a, man, we just couldn't pass up on a guy type draft for the Titans. This is position specific. They are not in a spot right now to draft or have that luxury of we're just going to take the best available player regardless of position or need. They have needs they have to address. They need to go in order of position they need.
Chad Withrow is with us from OutKick. It is a Friday. It's a Fireball Hot Take Friday, which means the hot seat is coming up next, and we will do that with Chad here on Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow is with us. Chad is the hot seat. Do you have a thought, or do you want to go right to the hot seat?
Do you ever lose your voice? This is my thought right now. Like you do this show solo every day, and I feel like your voice is always pretty strong. I could never do that. Like I would lose my voice by the last hour of the show every day. Do you drink hot tea every day? What's your secret? This is my thought right now before we get on the hot seat.
No, I will say this. I start to feel it. Like there are some weeks where, like especially around like Easter week, holiday week where a lot of Christian people are taking off on Sirius. So I'm doing like a lot of filling in. And it's like, okay, so I'll do like the Friday night show after this show, and then I'll do like a show on Sunday, and then it, I can really feel like, it's not. But I would say I lose it more mentally than I do vocally.
Well, and there's no getting it back, right? Like I think, a little inside baseball for people like us that do this for a living. When you lose your voice, it's gone until you can rest it and get it back. Whether you're sick or you've just lost your voice. That's what's remarkable to me is I feel like your voice is always there, and it's just you on a show all the time. So anyway, that was my thought.
Well,
Jared, now I'm ready for the hot seat.
To that point, Chris Sanders and I were debating Legarius Needs Knees this week, and he was like, you've done so much in radio. If Chase offered you this big-time contract, why wouldn't he do that given the success, whatever? And I said, but what if the doctor told Chase, like, hey, his vocal cords might give out on him? Then I am no good to you, right? No matter how good of a host I am, if I can't talk, I'm no good to you, and that's how I feel about Legarius Needs Knees if they end up going out. So it's fascinating that you brought that up. Okay.
The voice is your instrument, and the knees are the instrument of Legarius Needs. So that perfectly tracks.
Bingo. His knees are worth more than my voice, though, I would assume. Okay. Number one, Would you have made the move that the Houston Texans made, not only giving up what should be a high second rounder next year, because that is Minnesota's second round pick that went to Buffalo in exchange for Stephon Diggs, and the slashing of the final 3 years of the contract, what could be a high second round pick in exchange for 1 year of Stephon Diggs?
I think if I'm D'Amico Ryans and I'm the Texans organization right now, I make that move for this reason. I think they're very confident in the culture they have with that organization, in that locker room, under D'Amico Ryans, and with C.J. Stroud as a young quarterback. This is the move of a very confident organization that believes that, and look, we're going to find out if it works out or not, right? I think Stephon Diggs may just be a diva to the level that it might not work anywhere. But if you believe that you are strong enough as a locker room to bring in someone like him and knowing he's going to help, because he was good in Buffalo the whole time, so he's going to help you. He's still a great talent, and he's not washed yet by any means. If you believe your locker room is strong enough to handle that, you make this move. And I believe they believe this. The Texans are a team, and I know this, you know, of course, it's going to sound obvious. They're trying to win a Super Bowl like everyone in the league. Their goal to me is clearly, let's win a Super Bowl in C.J. Stroud's rookie contract before we have to pay him all the money. And we can fill in roster spots around him and do some things and have a lot of flexibility. We got it right with the quarterback, so let's go for broke right now while we have him in this rookie window. And for that reason, the Texans are a Super Bowl contender. They are. Going into the season, a team that won a playoff game a year ago, with the additions they've made, with the young players in that roster, they are a team that, to me, is clearly the best in the AFC South and is a Super Bowl contender. So the answer to the question is yes, I'd make that move if I'm them.
But the other part of this, though, is that contract, right? So if your locker room is so strong that you feel like, hey, we can bring Stephon Diggs in here, why do I have to give him $3 million extra dollars and let him become an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year when I didn't have to do that? And now I'm giving away 4 years of a second round pick, you know, contractual control of 4 years in order for 1 year of Diggs when I could have acquired 4 years of Diggs.
Well, it's two sides that are very confident in betting on themselves. So Stephon Diggs is saying, hey, I want flexibility. I want to be able to re-up and sign somewhere else, even if it's there after a year. And it's the Texans saying, yeah, we're confident too. We're confident that we can get rid of the end of this contract. And then you're going to still want to be here in the end of it. If it doesn't work out, great. You know, see you later. You can go sign somewhere else. So I think it's a very confident move. I think there's confidence on Diggs' part, and there's a ton of confidence on the Texans' part, and I'm buying their confidence right now. I think this is a team that's going to contend for a Super Bowl.
I was skeptical of the move before I knew about the contract. If I was the owner of the Texans, I'd veto that contract. I mean, I'd veto that move after the contract
stuff.
Veto the
move on the contract, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. I think if you're convinced by your football people, and to me, I don't know this. We'll ask John McClain about this next time we have him on the show. But if you are convinced by your football people that this is what's necessary to make him happy and to pull off this move, and this is a guy that puts us over the top, that's going to take us from, you know, good team that can get in the playoffs to possible great team that could win a Super Bowl, I think that's how your ownership signs off on it. And that's probably how they pitched it to him.
Number two, how big of a cancer is Stephon Diggs?
Pretty big. I've got a brother-in-law from Buffalo, and he goes up to Bills games every year. And every time there's Bills news, I talk to him about it. And my brother-in-law, PJ, is the most optimistic sports fan in the world. And I think if you're a Bills fan, you know, you have to be optimistic, right? If not, it'll just kill you. So he's always overly optimistic about everything. And I told him, I said, there is something up. This is not normal. What's going on with Stephon Diggs? The leaving the training camp, that whole story, the way they tried to play it down, that it wasn't a big deal. You knew something was up. I remember at the Super Bowl in Vegas, we had Donovan McNabb on our show and asked him about it. And he said, look, there's a reason for all these things. And he went back into his career. He's like, you can look through my career and you can see these little bitty signs that something's up with a receiver. And of course, he's talking about Terrell Owens.
Sure.
But he said, those little cracks show. And he said, so you know there's a lot worse going on when they start to show to the public. And that was his thoughts on Stephon Diggs. He's like, we're not getting the full story. it's probably far worse than anyone's letting on. And that's what I believe with him. So, look, the question you got to ask yourself is he a cancer or is he just a cancer in Buffalo?
Well, remember, he got kicked out of Minnesota,
too. That's what they're trying to bank on, right, is the hope that he was just a cancer in Buffalo won't be a cancer in Houston.
Well, remember, he got into it with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota, and they had to ship him out. And so, I mean, you know, and
he
Diggs.
He was there 4 years, right? Like, this was not just an immediate thing. He was in Buffalo for four years and was very productive. So it wasn't like he got to Buffalo and hated Josh Allen immediately and everything fell apart. It fell apart over time. So is he eventually going to be a cancer? I would say that his career says yes. At some point he will be. Is he going to be a cancer on day one or this season? I don't know.
Sure. I mean, A.J. Brown wasn't a problem year one. A.J. Brown was a massive problem in year two. T.O. was a massive problem in year two. And maybe that's the hope Houston has here. Okay.
Well, and again, going back to the contract deal, right? How long do they have?
1 year.
Yeah. So if he helps them win a Super Bowl, great move.
Three.
He can move on before he's a cancer.
Have the Bills fallen as an AFC contender after trading away Diggs? And it should be noted that Buffalo was 6-1 down the stretch with Diggs playing 37% of the snaps.
Look, I think that in the broad definition of contender, they are still a contender because they have Josh Allen at quarterback. And he's a top three guy in the NFL, right around there. So they are a contender because of him. I do believe this window has closed with their previous core. With who they've lost, and you know, Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs, Jordan Poyer. I mean, go down the list. There are some core guys that are leaders of that team that they've lost this offseason. So now the goal is to reopen another window. There needs to be another core built around Josh Allen. So as long as Allen is there and healthy and playing, I think the very broad definition of who could possibly win it all, they're going to be in that mix at the very low end of it, but they're not the contender they were a year ago or the year before that until they identify the next core for that next window for Josh Allen.
Rank the top five AFC teams.
Whew. Top five AFC teams. Well, I'm default going to the Chiefs because they are the dynasty right now in the AFC. So I'm going to go Chiefs one. I think Baltimore, two. I want to say Cincinnati, with Joe Burrow back and healthy, is going to be in that mix. So, yeah, let's do that. I'm going to go Cincinnati, three. I'm going to go Houston, four on that list. And fifth right now, boy, who do I want to put in at fifth? I guess I'll go Buffalo, but I don't feel great about it, right? Like, they're kind of hanging on barely, but I'm going to go Buffalo five. So, yeah, let's go Kansas City one, Baltimore two, Cincinnati three, Houston four, Buffalo five, but I don't feel great about it.
So I have Kansas City one, Houston two, Baltimore three, Cincinnati four, Buffalo five.
Well, we have the same five teams.
Yeah, no, I think
we juggled it a little bit in the middle, but that's look. I think that those five, you could probably rearrange and shuffle them, and put them in kind of any order. But the one I feel, you know, I think we both had Buffalo at five. The one I feel the least good about going into it is Buffalo.
Sure, but the thing is like, who's six? Because I'm thinking in the top of my head, like, you can't put Miami in that group, right? You can't put the Raiders in that group or the Steelers or the Colts in that group. Jacksonville.
Chargers. You know, Chargers with a new attitude with Harbaugh coach, and you got Justin Herbert. I think you kind of, you know, throw into the mix there also. It's a great question. Pittsburgh. Is Pittsburgh going to be anything with Russell Wilson? They were a playoff team a year ago. I would put Cleveland in, but
Cleveland.
I hate Deshaun Watson right now.
Cleveland's probably six.
As a quarterback, you know, Cleveland's going to be in that mix too. This is what I love about the NFL right now. And if you're a Titans fan, you should take heart with this. Why not the Titans at six? I mean, you can turn it around pretty quickly. This is not a 2 or 3 year rebuild. Shouldn't be. I mean, I don't think they're the sixth best team in the AFC, and I'm not arguing they are. But when you go into a season, there's always going to be someone that surprises. And when you start to look at, you know, even the fifth team in the AFC, when you get past four, you start to really sift through a bunch of teams. And I think to myself, you know what, why not the Titans jumping up this year with the moves they've made and a good draft and being that 16th AFC? It's possible.
Rank the top five AFC quarterbacks.
Top five AFC quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes, one. I'm going Joey Burrow, two. Josh Allen, three. Justin, I'm going to go Lamar Jackson, four. Justin Herbert, five. I'm probably leaving someone obvious off, but that's the top five on the top of my head.
Stroud or Rodgers would be the two that you might be leaving out.
Yeah. And they're right behind there. I can't even – it's tough for me to even factor in Aaron Rodgers right now. And I love Aaron Rodgers as a player. But, I mean, you know, he's with the Jets, and we saw about three plays of him with the Jets before he ruptured his Achilles. So, it's hard to know, you know, what he's going to be with that team, with that core. So, but, yeah, he's obviously, given his career, he's a Hall of Famer. He's going to be right there in that mix, too.
By the way, your list, Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Lamar, and Herbert. My list, Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Lamar, and Herbert. So, wow. Make of
that's
that what you
good.
Will.
That's pretty good. For the listener, I was given no prep on that.
Nope.
And, that was right off the top of the head. So, good to know we're on the same wavelength on really both of those. I had the same five teams, just in a different order also.
Next one. Do you have any excitement for the men's Final Four?
I've got excitement for UConn and Purdue playing on Monday night. I do not have excitement for the Final Four games. I just really hope that nothing wrecks the possibility of those two teams playing, because those are clearly, to me, the two best teams in America. They were throughout the year, and it's proven itself throughout the tournament. So I like it when in a college basketball national championship game we get the two best teams. We have the possibility for that. I think Purdue's the one team that can play with UConn, and I hope that's what we get for the national championship game. But, no, I'm not excited for these two games on Saturday.
Has women's basketball made a tremendous leap, or is it just a Caitlin Clark thing?
I think the game has made a leap. It's both. I think that Caitlin Clark is 1-1, a unicorn that it's going to be tough to recapture.
But she's like the Tiger Woods of women's basketball.
Say that again?
She's like the Tiger Woods of women's basketball.
She is. She is. And also, but, you know, Tiger Woods also helped propel golf to a new level of popularity, even when it at times went a part of it. Now, that's all changed because of Liv and the kind of sports being ripped apart right now at the seams, and it's not as popular for that reason. But my big question is, can Caitlin Clark be the 99 Women's World Cup of women's basketball in America? Can this spark a movement? Because that event with Brandi Chastain, you know, ripping off the shirt, the U.S. winning it, that sparked a revolution with girls playing soccer in the U.S., tons of interest in the U.S. women's national team. That really did something. Can Caitlin Clark do that for women's college basketball? I don't know. The ratings are going to go down next year when she's not a part of it. We know that. But how much do they go down? So either way, it's been great for the sport. Interest is at an all-time high. And I love it. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching. And I would, you know, rarely ever do this, but it's appointment viewing. Right? I'm getting home later tonight, and I am watching that game because Caitlin Clark's in it.
Last one. Is Nashville ready for another Predator spring run? And if they go on a run, how will the feelings be similar or different to 2017?
I'll tell you this. I was in the building last night for the win over St. Louis, and I have not been to a Preds game, full disclosure, in two seasons. I didn't go all of last year. Haven't gone this season. Went the season before that, I think. There was great energy in the building. It's very different, right? Like, I don't know. It's a generational thing, but I look back on that run in 2017, and I think that felt like a different generation of Preds fans, right? Just walking around the building, it feels like a new generation of Preds fans in the building. It did not feel the same as I walked around Bridgestone Arena last night. But I think they're ready. I think this town loves a winner, like any town.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get some spring hockey where your team's firing on all cylinders, it's going to unite this town. And I could feel that last night. For someone that doesn't often go to games, you know, I don't always watch the games on TV also, it was really cool to get the vibe that this is a thing, and we're going to get more of this thing because they're going to be in the playoffs, And they're going to have a chance to go on a run, which is terrific for the city.
Chad Withrow from Outkick, as always. Chad, you may step off the hot seat.
Love it every week. Jared, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you. We'll do it again next Friday.
Absolutely. So we talked about the mock draft 1.0 coming up next. I will be very, very sad, but not shocked if what I believe comes to fruition. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Okay, that was earlier today. That was the Jared Stillman Mock Draft 1.0, which, by the way, is the first time that we've ever done such a thing. And in the Jared Stillman Mock Draft 1.0, I have, unfortunately for the Titans, Joe Alt going at number 5 to Chicago in a trade with the Chargers. And I will say this. On draft night, and I don't know where our draft show will be, but I'm sure it will be somewhere. On draft night, if this comes to fruition and Chicago does in fact move up to get Joe Alt, I will be sad. But I won't be shocked. And I won't be shocked for one main reason. It just makes too much sense. Just like the Titans drafting Joe Alt makes too much sense, just sitting at 7 and, again, thinking that 4 quarterbacks might go, and if 4 quarterbacks don't go, 4 quarterbacks and 3 receivers, and like the Chargers don't need a left tackle, and the Giants don't need a left tackle, and Arizona doesn't need a left tackle. It's like, this would be perfect. When I look at Chicago, everybody says they got to go wide receiver. But did they not just trade for Keenan Allen? And so I'm thinking about the Bears, which is not a well-run, they're not a well-run organization, but they try. And I think about kind of the most important positions on a football team. Number 1, quarterback. Well, we know that they have that. That's going to be Caleb Williams. Number 2, wide receiver, left tackle, corner, pass rusher. We know that that's kind of the second group. Last year, they traded a second-round pick for Montez Sweat with the Commanders, gave him a massive contract. They got pass rusher taken care of. Corner. They just gave Jalen Johnson a humongous contract. They've got corner taken care of. Wide receiver. The number 1 receiver, they have that. It's DJ Moore. So even if they have an opportunity to gain Roma Dunze, and I like Roma Dunze, but if they have the opportunity to gain Roma Dunze, it's like you've already got a number 1 receiver who's in his prime. And so that's part of the reason why Chicago made the trade last year, where they passed on Bryce Young and they passed on C.J. Stroud and all the other quarterbacks, was because they were getting D.J. Moore in as part of the deal. And so they get D.J. Moore, plus they get the 2 first-round picks. They take the right tackle, so they've got a right tackle, which, of course, we know on this program is important. They've got a right tackle, a pass rusher, a quarterback, a number 1 receiver, a number 2 receiver, and a corner. This is when you go left tackle. It just makes too much sense. I haven't heard anybody, any draft guru, any insider, I haven't heard anybody linking the Bears to a left tackle. And maybe the Bears, because it will cost quite the draft capital, again, in my mock draft, and the Bears do not have a lot in the kind of the day 2 area. They don't have a lot because they did give up that second round pick in order to get Montez Sweat. And so it will cost for the Chicago Bears to make this trade to take Joe Alt. It will cost them their second rounder next year in trading with the Chargers, and the Chargers may say no to that. They may want more. Now, again, I use the draft trade chart, and they say that that's a fair trade. But as far as I'm concerned, it just makes too much sense for the Bears to take a left tackle. Now, maybe the Bears think, okay, well, we can take Olu Fashanu, and we can wait and take him at 9. That I could see. But I can't see the Bears saying, oh, we don't need a left tackle because we have Braxton Jones at left tackle, who's never going to make a Pro Bowl, never going to be an All-Pro. And again, I talked to Bill Zimmerman, who covers the Bears, does a blog up there. He used to be our assistant program director at SiriusXM at Mad Dog Sports Radio. And so I know Billy Z pretty well. And I texted Billy Z and I said, hey, like, do you think there's any chance that they try to go and make a move up for Joe Alt ahead of the Titans? And he said, no, I think they're really looking at one of the 3 receivers or they're looking to trade down. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, the receivers, that's why they made the trade last year to get DJ Moore. DJ Moore is a number one wide receiver. That's why I think that, again, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there, and in the Jared Stillman mock draft 1.0, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not there. He goes at 4 to Arizona. If he's there, the Chargers are going to take him, because even though people will say, well, Harbaugh, he wants to build in the trenches, so Harbaugh, he could go ahead and he could just take... No, he's not going to do that. He's got a left tackle. He's not going to take a left tackle to put him at right tackle when he doesn't have a receiver and Marvin Harrison is sitting there. He's not going to do that. And again, I think about the Bears. And I just... Everybody and their grandma knows that if Joe Alt is available at 7, the Titans are going to take him. And I will say this, you know, I don't know what Rand Carthon thinks in terms of what the fans think, right? You know, the old saying is, if you listen to the fans, pretty soon you're sitting with them. And it's easy to say that from the outside looking in, but it's actually kind of difficult to practice it. It's difficult, especially here, where, you know, as well as I do, ownership listens to the fans. If ownership didn't listen to the fans, they wouldn't have turned on a guy that they loved in Mike Mularkey, and they did love Mike Mularkey. And they turned on him because the fans had turned on him. And so I don't know if Rand Carthon listens to the fans or not, but if the Titans don't take Joe Alt, like let's say that Alt's there at 7, the Titans are on the board, and the Titans turn the card in, and it's J.C. Latham, and Alt becomes a perennial All-Pro, the fans are going to go nuts. And the fans are going to go nuts even before that happens. So everybody and their grandma knows that the Titans are waiting for Joe Alt to get there with the 7th overall pick. Similarly to how everybody and their grandma knows that New England is going to sit at 3 and they are going to take whoever doesn't go 2, right? If May goes 2, Daniels goes 3. If Daniels goes 2, May goes 3. Everybody and their grandma knows the Titans want Joe Alt. So if you want Joe Alt, you have to get to 6. And everybody and their grandma also knows, boy, grandma knows a lot. Everybody and their grandma knows that Jim Harbaugh wants out at 5. Now, maybe if Harrison's there, it changes his mind. But again, everybody, every smokescreen is he wants out at 5. And I get it. This is a deep draft, and so he can trade out, move back, and in my mock draft, again, he's taking Talese Fuaga, putting him at right tackle, picking up a, you know, an extra 2025 pick, and then kind of building from there. The only thing that I can't, you know, the only thing that can save that of all the different chatter is if J.J. McCarthy actually goes in the top 4. Because, again, I don't think Harbaugh passes on Harrison, and... thus, you would get Alt. So if it's 4 quarterbacks, Harbaugh takes Harrison at 5, then the only shot that you would have of somebody taking Joe Alt would be if somebody trades with the Giants. But I think the Giants, at that point, Marvin Harrison's off the board. They need a receiver. They don't need a tackle. All the quarterbacks are gone. It's too easy. You just draft Malik Nabers. And I don't think that the Giants are trading out of Malik Nabers. I think if it's Nabers and Harrison's gone and the quarterbacks are gone and the Giants are kind of a wild card for the quarterbacks, the Giants are not a wild card at tackle. The Giants have a left tackle, Andrew Thomas. He is a franchise left tackle. The Giants drafted Evan Neal in the first round 2 years ago to play right tackle, high in the first round. He might kind of stink, but if he does kind of stink, they signed Jermaine Illuminor, a guy I wanted the Titans to sign. And Illuminor or Neal could kick inside to guard, and one of those two guys is going to do it. You're not going to add a 4th tackle with the 6th pick. So at that point, then it is, if the Giants are sitting there and they're saying, okay, well, we can either take Malik Nabers or we can trade out with Chicago or the Jets, which would be the only teams that would be in striking distance that would make a move for that tackle. They would then be saying, okay, we're going to pass on Nabers and probably have to settle for Adunze or Bowers, and I don't think either of those two guys are at the level of Nabers. So the Giants are going to take Nabers. So the only thing I can see is Chicago or the Jets moving up, and I don't think it's going to be the Jets. I think the team to watch out for is Chicago. And there's no chatter about Chicago and a left tackle. There's no chatter about Chicago and Joe Alt, and I think that's a bad thing. I think it's a bad thing because this time of year, when there's chatter, the opposite is usually true, which is why I do not see Minnesota moving all the way up to 4 for J.J. McCarthy, because it seems too obvious. It seems too obvious for them to have to deal both first-round picks, maybe something more, in order to move up to 4 to take the quarterback, when is he really the fourth best player in this draft? Mel Kiper ranks him 14th and doesn't even think he's the 14th best player, just thinks he's going to go in the top six. So Mel's like, I had to get him up, but I'm not putting him up past 14. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. So the one thing to worry about, and I am worried, is Chicago jumping you. Then the question is it worth it to Chicago to jump you when they could just sit back and take Fautanu or Fashanu? Now, again, in my mock draft 1.0, I have the Titans, because I don't have J.J. McCarthy going in the top four. I have the Titans trading that pick to Minnesota and trading 38 in order to pick up Minnesota's fourth rounder, which is 108, plus the Titans get 11 and 23. So they get two first rounders out of it, because there's going to be a run on the mid to late round. And then I have the Titans trading up from 23 to 21 with Miami in order to take Amarius Mims, the right tackle out of Georgia. Because I think the Titans are going to go bang, bang, tackle, tackle. And I think Rand kind of hinted at that the other day when he was asked about the free agent market at tackle and said there's still some good guys out there, but this is a deep class. I don't think he's thinking about taking a guy in the fifth round to start at right tackle. So I think tackle-tackle is a real possibility. By the way, that's the Jared Stillman Mock Draft 1.0. We will have that podcasted separately by itself, so that if you want to go listen to the whole mock draft, you can do so. Stillman & Company, 615-737-1025. I have a bone to pick, and I will pick that bone next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's Stillman & Company on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Now flung into the zone by Braden Shen. Down the left wing. Predators get it. Here is the feed out ahead of Forsberg. Breaking toward the empty net. He slides it in. And the Predators take a 5-3 lead into the empty net.
There you go. That's the empty netter from last night as the Predators sealed the deal. It was not their prettiest victory. I'm not going to claim that. But it was, again, a binary victory that the Predators needed, in which I said going into yesterday, I said, look, I was okay with the Colorado loss, didn't love it. I was totally fine with the Bruins loss, but that last night had to be a win, and they got the win. So this morning, I'm listening to the Robbie and Rex Road program. You know I love the Robbie and Rex Road program. And so I'm listening to the Robbie and Rex Road program after the Predators had lost three in a row, after I had spent all week saying, look, it's fine, guys. You're right there. You lost to Arizona because you got cocky up 2-0. You had a point in 18 straight games. You thought your poop didn't stink. And all of a sudden, now you are on your heels and you lose. Then you lose to Colorado because you didn't handle the hit well on McDonough and the match penalty and everything else. But you're right there. And Colorado's a bona fide cup contender. And you're right there with Boston, neck and neck, and you end up, you know, basically firing one up to Charlie Coyle, who has a breakaway, puts it in, you lose the other day. And those are all cup contenders outside of Arizona. So it's like, you know what? You're right there. This is what somebody said this morning, called in on the Robbie and Rex Road program.
Rob, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Great game last night. You know, the one thing that is going to get me more than anything all day today is that I don't need to hear about Stillman say, I'm worried. I'm so worried. Well, he can be unworried now because the Preds played awesome. And guess what? That was a heavy team, and they played really, really good against a heavy, heavy team. Yeah, first and second period were so-so, but then they turned on the switch just like they always do for the third period. Let's go, baby! We're going to the playoffs!
So, as old buddy over there is incredibly excited about celebrating that I don't have to listen to Jared panic. If you've been listening to this show, you know Jared hasn't been panicking. In fact, Jared, me, I've been telling you, stop panicking. Stop doing it. It's fine. You're fine. It'll be fine. And tomorrow they take on the Islanders, and I expect them to win that too. But this team is ready for the playoffs. I'm ready for the playoffs, and as one wise man once said on this program, get me to the playoffs, baby! And that's how I feel. And that's what they need to do. Stillman and Company, that's it for us. We are out of here. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy the basketball, the women's basketball, the men's basketball, the hockey this weekend. I'll be spending time with my puppy. But everybody, we will see you all Monday at 2.